The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome back to the ASAP Weekly Zelda, Legend of Zelda, Zelda podcast. My name
Link
is
podcast.
Link podcast. My name is Robert Orlazero, and I'm joined by Matt and Tristan. How's it going, you two?
It's going well.
Not bad. Yourself?
I'm doing quite well. We have a lot to get into. By the way, this is if you are listening to this, you are one of the few, because we like to keep the artistic integrity in this podcast. And so there's only two options for you to currently be listening to the podcast, mostly because my podcast, well, the podcast service that I use, you need 5 episodes out before they start distributing it. So you are either 1, a patron, which thank you patrons who are supporting us and listening to us, or 2, you have asked me for the link directly and I have sent you the direct link to the podcast.
there's something incredibly funny to me about. Yeah, we're here for integrity. Also, we can't have it on the thing.
We can't have what? Oh yeah, like we can't spoil
be distributed
it.
Yet.
Oh yeah, we can't be distributed. Yeah, yeah.
They don't want you to hear what we have to say.
True.
I just love that this whole
big podcast.
I just love this whole bit with Matt that like, oh yeah, we're gonna keep it like, you know, artistic and all that. And just like we're only talking, you know, like no one else is here. And then it like, then it's actually like, this is actually the case right now. Like, but you know, there was one thing funny, like, this is a sidebar, but I'm going to start with our, definitely not the Nintendo podcast that of another, you know, giant IP that we did. I was thinking about this the other day and I'm like, I really like that we're going to just kind of close like a nice bow on that. And there's something nice about that. Instead of like a podcast just kind of fading to obscurity for like life reasons, just being like, yeah, we've done what we set out to do and we've kind of made a bow, you know?
Mission
like I kind of like that. Yeah. Because currently like with our Rocket League podcast, like it's like we're going on 5 years soon, right? Like in well, soon, like 4.5 years now, but we're gonna get to 5 years. And there's part of me that's like, you know, should I just like do like a very nice bow like at the end, you know, or should I like keep dragging it and then it progressively gets worse? It's like the 8th season of Community and you're like, why are we still here, you know?
I don't know, man. You gotta be careful. What if they release Rocket League 2
but all the cosmetics are more
expensive?
So Unreal Engine 5 Rocket League is the big thing right now. So it's like part of me wants to like be like, okay, pause and we'll be back if Unreal Engine 5 gets released.
So they're gonna make Rocket League 2 with like a PvE component, and then like a year after it comes out, they're gonna be like, actually no, we're gonna just
some magic PvE. Gonna be only like, 2
people
Rocket
on
League,
a team
like,
now.
We're gonna tell the epic story of Rocket League.
what are the eggs?
No hate to Rocket League. Like I don't mean this in like a disparaging way, but I'm kind of shocked it's like still a thing after 5 years. Like
it's at, okay. So here's a secret. It's at 8.
No, that's yeah. Sorry, I meant like yeah. I meant as the podcast.
Oh,
I'm like,
the
wow,
podcast.
There's been like enough
Rocket
League to talk about.
Our listenership hasn't changed. Like once we hit our like we'll say our max, right? It's pretty much been that for the last 3 years. So
it's not bad at all.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised there's been enough Rocket League to talk about.
It's mostly, it's definitely changed to just like, well, they have tournaments and stuff, right? Like the esports stuff. So
Speaking of enough things to talk about.
Yes, I was going to say, Matt, I need you to bring us back here.
Yeah, we should probably stop having this Zelda podcast be instead a podcast about podcasts.
We're ruining the artistic integrity of this product, which is supposed to be evergreen, by, you know, mentioning things that are happening currently in this time.
You know, why don't we get into our main topic today, which is, as you know, the name of the episode, presumably, that hasn't been named yet. This is just recording.
It's Tears of the Kingdom, part one. That is the name of the episode.
Huge new Zelda game. Let's talk about our credentials here.
I have a starting point. You ready, Matt? You ready for this?
Okay, sure.
I want to talk about the scope of, or the style of this game right away compared to Breath of the Wild. This one feels a lot more focused in a lot of ways. I think that's probably one of the first things I mentioned. And I absolutely love it. Like, I love how much more focused it is. And maybe part of it is that you still get a lot of the creativity in exploring.
Absolutely.
But there's something about the fact that, like, the plot's still there driving you, and even when you go off on like randomness, it doesn't, I mean, you could really explore if you want to, but I just think I like this format a little more. Like, I think it's a little tighter, and I think it actually helps it. I don't know if either of you have thoughts on that.
I do, but just before I respond to my thoughts, I just want to add a disclaimer for our listeners that we're going to try to not, you know, dump spoilers on everyone. We're going to try not be super explicit in spoilers and whatnot, but if you're trying to go into Tears of the Kingdom with absolutely no insight into the game, you know, you probably should go do that instead of listening to a podcast describing people's experiences in it.
My guess, like, for this, for part one, you should have probably, my guess is about 50 hours, and we'll say, I think that'll give you a fair
impressive thing, and this is not necessarily only my insight, it's definitely a sentiment that I've seen shared elsewhere. It is kind of incredible that it's really hard to find Tears of the Kingdom spoilers, just because everybody's sharing either their, like, war crime devices or the results of said war crime devices. It's like, yeah, you know what, that's pretty cool.
To get back to your point about how being more focused, I definitely feel like, you know, Breath of the Wild really just kind of opened up, and once you got off the plateau, it's just like, all right, you have to kill Ganon at some point. Have fun. Meanwhile,
Breath of the Wild had direction in that if you went the wrong way off the plateau, you couldn't progress because a Lynel beat you to death. But other than that, it was pretty unguided.
There's some subtle guidance in Breath of the Wild. Like, there's a lot of stuff that triggers to send you towards Zora's domain first.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
There's like a ton of little Zora people who are in like some amount of distress on like half of Hyrule Field, who will be like, oh, you should definitely go that way, specifically that way.
And I think it's maybe because of the general like format of such a bigger, like, taking open world seriously, right? That I think they felt, I imagine the reason it was so annoying was because they felt that a lot of people who aren't used to open world games would just get lost, right?
Yeah, I think with this game, they're allowed to be more focused and direct because, you know, they went into this knowing that everyone's already seen the ground level map of Hyrule again. You know, people have played Breath of the Wild, they know this map. Exploring this map isn't some grand series of revelations. It's just like, you know, these are places you've already been before, so they can start us in the center of Hyrule Field, that Hyrule Castle Town, instead of down south of the plateau. They can send us to Rito Village and also say, hey, you should also check out Terrytown. And, you know, people will people know how to explore to different areas. You know, Death Mountain's less oppressive because there's no longer lava everywhere, so you don't have to, like, solve an entire, like, equipment puzzle just to get into Goron City anymore.
I think it's 100%, like, if you're listening to this review, and this review is whether you buy the game or not, the assumption the developers make is that you've been and you've played Breath of the Wild.
Yeah,
I think is a fair assumption to make.
And it makes the game way more fun, because this is a more challenging game. I think that's fair to say, Matt.
Yes.
And I think the creativity is off the walls, and I think we should probably get into, like, the different powers. I'd like to talk about those. But it's like, if you are having trouble with Breath of the Wild in some of, like, the puzzles and, like, the creativity you have to do, like, the out-of-box thinking, because I feel like there's sometimes it feels like, oh, I figured this out, but that feeling of, like, I don't think the developers would have done it this way. I love that feeling, and you get so much of that in this game, and I just...
I feel like saying out-of-the-box thinking isn't really applicable to this game. There just isn't a box anymore. If we go into the powers, so the main ones you've got are Ultra Hand. What's the one that makes you go up?
Ascend.
You've got Time Reversal, and you've got Auto Build. I think that's it. Am I missing anything?
Is there any new? So, is there any ones that are discovered? Sorry. I think Auto Build.
Oh, so sorry. What, did I accidentally spoil something?
Well, I don't think you did. I think there's one power that is used at the beginning of the game that you don't have till later. So I think you did just spoil something, but.
I apologize. There is a hidden power.
Okay. The one I have, okay, I'll just explain because I don't know the names, right? But the one where you can grab stuff and connect them to other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Then you have the one that connects weapons together.
Oh, yes, Fuse, of course. I always forget that that's a separate power.
It could just be the grab one, honestly. My mind. And then you have the, if you're close enough to a ceiling above you, you can, like, flow through it. And then there's the turn back time.
Yeah, okay. And then there's the other one that I mentioned that...
But the reason it doesn't feel like a spoiler is because literally I think the first thing, like, once the very beginning of the game, they, like, rebuild a bridge, right? Like, before that power is introduced, I saw that happen, and I'm like, this is 100% a thing that's going to be relevant.
All I'll say for that is clearly you're not exploring the depths as much as you should.
Was it the depths?
The depths? You mean, like, underneath the map, or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so this is one where it's not related to the main story. You can just find it separately?
Yeah, it's completely separate from the main story.
Interesting. So you, off exploring, you probably found this a lot earlier than...
Oh, yeah, I found otherwise. This. Like, the reason why I so offhandedly mentioned it is because I found it, like, within my first 10 hours.
Okay, let's talk about the caves in a second. Like, is that what this is related to here? Like,
oh no, this isn't caves. This is the depths. You know what the depths are, right?
I'm trying. No, I don't think I do.
Okay,
oh, man.
Hold on. No. But this is fine. You're allowed to spoil this for me. I'm okay.
I want
to
talk about this because it's really cool, and I saw a thing about it, and I would like to share something.
Yes, go, Tristan. You start
needing
off.
Necessarily knowledge of the game. To your point earlier about the game expecting you to, like, remember the map and things like that, now that we've segued into it, Hyrule is, like, overlaid on top of something called the Depths, which is effectively the Dark World from Link to the Past, up to and including the fact that the entire, like, Depths is the map of Hyrule. Like, things correspond.
Yeah.
if there's like a mountain, like it's literally like a reverse like Inception thing going on. Like,
yeah. So
if
once we're done
a mountain,
this,
it's going to be like a deep chasm in the depths. It's so cool.
Once we're done this podcast and you're done your soccer or whatever and you've got free time, please go jump in a giant hole in Hyrule. There's an entire second map.
Wow. Yeah,
it's incredible. Yo,
separately, anyone who said like, oh, this is just an expansion game, get out of here.
Yeah, like, no, no.
A
like,
deserved full
It's extra cool because you can like navigate your way. You can find shrines using the depths. Because there's these like these roots of light.
Yeah, the depths are completely pitch black.
Yeah, they're pitch black except for these like pillars of light essentially. And like other ways you can like navigate around. But if you're in the depths and you're exploring and you see like light shining roots up top, that's a shrine. Like you can find a shrine there. So it's really cool.
And like the terrain is flipped, so mountains become like pits and
Rivers are walls though.
Rivers are walls. Like gorges become mountain ranges.
Keep talking because you've blown my mind. And like, what's so great?
I'm actually surprised you didn't know about this.
This is so great because it shows like how authentic I'm playing this game.
No, it's true.
I have not read a thing.
Short of the Warcraft engines, this is
if you want to get introduced to this. If you want to get introduced to the depths properly, there's a bunch of quests in Lookout Landing surrounding it. Like
that's probably what I didn't do.
Yeah, that's almost certainly what you didn't do because there. If you like talk to the researchers there, they'll be like, "Oh, hey, you know, like, while you're around, do you want to go jump in a giant hole for science?" you go and you do that, and they like introduce some of the concepts of the depths.
Yeah.
Okay. Another side note: I absolutely love how this game works. Where like, I think I could have beaten, but I could probably never, like, even know of that and beat most of the game.
Yeah, I mean, like, the depths is, it's where you get most of the Zonite for upgrading your battery capacity.
Yeah.
And so if you want to do cool building stuff, you gotta go down there, you gotta mine.
Also, it's terrifying, heads up.
Yes, there's whole other mechanics around it, like
there's a lot going on down there.
If so enemies down there are like corrupted, and when they hit you, it lowers your max HP until you either go to a light route or go back to the surface or eat specific food. And it's like one hit will just always lose you at least one heart, even if you have a ton of armor.
Okay.
It's terrifying. I love the depths.
One thing I wanted to start off, let me say that I was not expecting to be talking about a whole world I didn't know about. the first thing here. Second thing, I was about to mention how I like the caves. Because I thought they were a great addition of, ooh, you found this cave, and it's you can explore it. But sure. This is the depth.
But sure, there's an entire second map of cave systems.
So whoever's listening to this podcast in a year, because obviously like that's how long it'll take us to release 5 episodes, and they finally get to listen to this podcast, and then they get to remember, tell me how long it took you, or don't. Tell me in your mind how long it took you to figure out about the depths.
How long did it take you to realize that Robert didn't know what I was talking about?
Yes. I do appreciate that I was just honest, because I like when you asked me, I was just gonna be like, "Yeah, I know what that is. It might just have a different name." And I'm like, "Nah, no chance." I see what it is. No, this is great. Okay, here's the question: do we want to have you guys kind of finish your talk here on the depths? And then go into my spiel,
I guess
what you could say is like the fact that they've created this whole other layer of the world on top of the world that they're already giving us is pretty insane, right?
So, yeah. So, a lot of the marketing was focused on the Sky Islands, and we'll get into those. But while we're just talking about the Depths are on a completely, like, the Sky Islands are a nice small addition to the game. The Depths are massive addition to the game. And there's a lot of really interesting, like, thought that's gone into their construction. Because of the way, like, water flows in Hyrule, some sections of the Depths are just locked off from each other. And you have to, like, use your, as you start learning the rules of how the Depths work, you can use that information to selectively go down to the Depths so you find the things you're looking for. I'm not going to spoil some of the connections because, you know, you haven't gone to the Depths yet, and it's really cool to, like, learn that for yourself, like, mm-hmm. what the connections are. But there's so many, like, small different things that if you know what the map above says, I can tell you what you're going to find in the Depths there.
Ooh, that's cool. I just also want everyone to appreciate that I essentially play these games like I'm a real anime protagonist, where I don't know a thing that's wrong, and I just take on, like, head first into whatever thing is in front of me. Blinders on, and dumb as a rock.
The Depths are also, like, really where, you know, constructing things with Ultra Hand...
oh, that's where, like, all these really things takes are coming off. From.
Because, mm-hmm. like, you know, I briefly mentioned, you know, that's where all the Zonite mines are. And you use that Zonite, you trade it into the robots for crystals, and you trade the crystals to another robot to increase your battery capacity. And then that battery capacity powers your vehicles that you then use to drive around the Depths, because the Depths is huge, hostile, and you really don't want to be walking. True. You're usually going somewhere in the Depths, so... you know, there's no shrines down there to my knowledge, so you're not, you know, intricately searching it. You have a destination you're going to, so vehicles are super important down there.
And so it's like, is it faster travel than, like, exploring above ground then, essentially?
I would say it's
probably slower by default.
It's slower because, like,
but you need to use a vehicle.
Yeah, because you don't really want to be going out into the darkness.
And I imagine making a vehicle would be a lot of fun, right? Yeah. Like, and all that stuff, right? Yeah.
Honestly, like, judging from online contributions, making a vehicle is the most fun thing in this game.
I like all the basic vehicles you can make, like making a like a rocket shield by using fuse just on a rocket with your shield. And you can, like, go full Treasure Planet. And just
yeah.
Same with minecarts. You can use them as, like, impromptu skateboards.
Oh yeah.
Like, there's a lot of there's a lot that you can do with vehicles in this game. Because do you mind if I explain what auto build does?
Yeah, let's just go into that last power. I haven't found it, but we're good. Listen, anyone listening to this. By the time they'll be listening to this, they should have beat the game. So go.
Yeah. So auto build is basically the capstone that, like, puts all the vehicle creation stuff together. Because you can ultra hand some random crap you find lying around. You can go to a dispenser, drop off some cores to get some new gacha vehicle parts. But you're going to be limited by what you have on hand. With auto build, what it allows you to do is whenever you make something, it's saved into your recent creations, and then you can just build it. Like, it'll gather any parts in the area that go towards the thing you're trying to build, and it'll socket them in. But if you're missing something, it'll cost some Zonite to just create a temporary version of that. So if you make, like, a car you really like, and you have the Zonite for it, you can just make that car anywhere. Mm.
That's really cool. So it's like essentially a gallery or, like, a shop. Or like a saves all the things, essentially.
Yeah, it saves all the things and allows you to...
Yeah, like, it's like templates. It's really nice.
Zonite's super common once you get, like, once you know where to get it. So it allows you to just make a hover bike. You're like, man, I want to get up this cliff. Make a hover bike, and you can now go up the cliff. It's...
And I thought I was so clever with all my hot air balloon nonsense. But here
I am. I mean, if you have hot air balloon nonsense, you can just make hot air balloons anywhere.
The hot air balloon sword, though, is my favorite sword. it just looks so dumb. Anyway, let's refocus here. We were going through the
powers when we went off.
Oh, true.
On a
you know what?
Tangent.
You're right. Keep going, Matt.
So
I'll stop trying to lead here.
You know, I kind of covered Ultrahand. I kind of covered Ultrahand a bit when talking about the vehicles, but it's also really nice because it feels like a less restrictive Magnesis.
Oh, yeah.
At its most basic.
I noticed that as well. Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's just so much nicer for puzzle solving. And the way it interacts with Rewind is really interesting because if there's ever anything that's just slightly out of reach, just pick up something, drop it, stand on it, rewind it. It'll then shoot up into the sky and congratulations, just pick up the thing you were trying to get. Mm-hmm. And
there's a lot of that in this game. Meshing the powers together, and you just feel that
it feels to me, having not played it, but it feels to me that they like looked at all the people doing things with Magnesis and went, actually, I think we want to let them do that with anything, and that's why Magnesis itself didn't come back.
Yeah, it feel like the powers in Breath of the Wild, I think one criticism I made, if I didn't, this is a criticism of Breath of the Wild, if a puzzle had water, it meant Cryonis is going to be used and nothing else matters. If there is a metal like plank, you're using Magnesis, nothing else matters.
Yeah, exactly.
The powers really didn't interact in any meaningful way. Like you could stasis something, but you couldn't then Magnesis it. The closest interaction is stasis and bombs.
Yep.
But in this game, you know, Ultra Hand, I just mentioned the Ultra Hand Rewind interaction. Ultra Hand does its obvious thing with auto build, and that you Ultra Hand, you have to use Ultra Hand to build the things first before they save and auto build. You can pick stuff up with auto. Let's say you make like a jet fighter or something. You can pick it up with Ultra Hand to like have it, to put it into the air, put it down, get into the pilot seat. Rewind, it'll go up into the air, and then you have an aerial start to your flight instead of trying to like get off the ground.
I think that, like, to me, the greatest thing about this game is that it feels like it allows for a lot more, we'll say, inefficient solutions.
Yes. Yeah.
Like there's two or three like things that probably the developer thought of like this is the way in this general area that you should probably solve this puzzle, or sometimes it's not even a puzzle, sometimes it's like platforming, sometimes it's like how to get to the next platform. And it's like, no, there's actually like five or six other ways you could do it. Because I get really stubborn and I start doing really like dumb things, but I think they're fun.
If we get into fuse, you know, on your track of like being able to do all sorts of things, like the things you can fuse makes shields, as Tristan alluded to, much, much more useful than they were in Breath of the Wild. Because like in Breath of the Wild, shields were useful if you had a one-handed weapon. Otherwise, you just didn't use a shield because spears and two-handed swords, no shield. In Tears of the Kingdom, you can use a shield you can attach a cannon to it if you want to shoot people. You can add a rocket to it, and now you can just shoot up into the air at any time you want. You can put a minecart on it, and now you have a skateboard. You can put a minecart on it, and you can like skateboard ride minecart rails. It's incredible.
It's really good.
Sorry.
No, and I think like that is just like the part, like that's why I think a lot of people are, or like me personally, this is why I'm enjoying this game, and I haven't even like really explored it, but even with like the couple basic powers, it already felt like the, we'll say the complex, the depth of complexity you could do with them was so much greater, right? Like the combination of them all, or even just some of the individual powers, like how creative you could get with them was just so much more than the mm-hmm. Breath of the Wild. And I think that's the big thing where I'm like, this is why it feels like it's such a crazy game. And like part of me feels, you know, just kind of mentioning these powers, which like will be hard for me to ever go back to Breath of the Wild, right?
Yes.
Where you don't have this luxury. But I mean, this is essentially the point. I think the point is you beat Breath of the Wild, you explore it like crazy. If you were to introduce people to these games, you'd have them play Breath of the Wild first to its entirety, and then get into this game. I think that'd be the appropriate thing to do, because going backwards, I just feel like you're creating expectation.
Yeah.
No, and obviously you they're building off what they learned, right?
You definitely cannot play Breath of the Wild after playing Tears of the Kingdom. You have to go through them in order. Also on Fuse, I think Fuse fixes the durability issue Breath of the Wild had. Because like my biggest complaint with durability in Breath of the Wild was that I would have a bunch of really good weapons. I'd really not want to use them, because if I kill if I kill a pack of Bokoblins, I'm probably gonna get some crappy Dragonbone clubs.
Mm-hmm.
At high levels of progression, and that's it. And that feels bad. But in Tears of the Kingdom, every enemy you kill drops a horn, at least, which is usually like, for whatever tier of enemy you're fighting at, is usually a pretty good fusion material mm-hmm. for your tier of play.
Grab a stick, grab the horn. Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing that's really nice is that there's a lot, once you start learning some of the places, there's a lot more opportunity to regain some of those really nice weapons that you might get, like the Royal Guard weapons, for example, because you can just go to Hyrule Castle. It's not nearly as scary as it is in Breath of the Wild. And every Blood Moon, those items come back. Because that's how this game solves memory limitations, is it just resets all item placements every Blood Moon, as long as it's not in a chest. And so you go get these really nice items and you fuse them with something, and now you have a great weapon again. And I feel like I just have great weapons, and I can go into combat and I can lose these weapons, but I can just get stuff back. And I feel like I get things from combat now, which is a huge improvement over Breath of the Wild, where I felt like, why would I want to go fight things? I'm just going to like effectively lose stuff that I want.
Yep.
Now, to avoid spoiling anything for you, just while I'm thinking about combat and enemies.
Yeah, we can get on that topic a little bit here now. Yep.
There's a lot of huge increase in enemy variety, which I love. But specifically, Robert, have you encountered, and you'll know what I'm talking about
okay,
if you have.
Here we go. Second have time you encountered, that you're here we go.
Have you encountered the new replacement enemy for Guardians yet?
No, I have not. I'm just before that point, I'm pretty sure.
It's not just before that point. They're spread out through the world.
Are they separate from the arcs?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They're oh, so you just define them?
Yeah, they're out there. They're waiting. They're terrifying.
Okay. No, I have not.
If you have not encountered an enemy that made you, and apologies, shit your pants.
I think my favorite part about them is I'm not going to...
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'll spoil it. But once you kill them, it gets worse.
Yes.
Wait, what? Hold on, explain. Okay. I feel you can spoil this. Or is it like, is this like a Hydra situation? Or is it like you've killed one, so the next time you see one, their stats are better?
It's similar to a Hydra situation.
Okay, gotcha.
There's problems.
It's not a Hydra situation as you kill one, you face two or anything. It's
more of a Kinder Surprise.
It's a Kinder Surprise.
Here's my question. Here's the question I actually have about these. Are these related to the main plot at all?
Yes,
sort of.
100%. Okay.
So I'll at some point have to fight these.
Well, sorry, they're not related to the main plot, is in you, well, yes and no. You
is this like the guy who like had the bow and arrow and like electric things in Breath of the Wild?
Oh,
is this
no,
the
no.
equivalent here? No, okay.
No, the Lynels still exist. That's what you're thinking of.
No, I'm thinking of like that kind of scenario where it's like, go steal some, you know, some food
no,
from
no,
the
no,
orc.
No, no,
or,
they
or the
don't,
troll,
they
I mean.
Don't appear in the main story, I don't
gotcha.
Think.
They're just lore relevant as the...
They do appear in one very significant quest.
That's a side quest is what you're telling me.
Yes.
There's significant side quests, which I'll probably like once you... Since I'm probably going to be like the, once again, and I feel like I'm playing this in every single podcast I'm in, I'm the guy who's just going to do the main quest, like, probably as much as I possibly can, and then explore the other things. Although
here,
I don't know
it,
if that's...
Here, let me put it this way. Yeah. If you want to finish the game with a Master Sword, you're going to run into these enemies.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. So if I want the Master Sword, okay. Yeah, I think that's,
yeah,
I think
that's
a good,
probably a good way
good
to
put it.
Yeah.
And I did get the Master Sword last time, right? Like, I went through the forest and all that,
yeah.
So.
It's theoretically possible to get the Master Sword without running into these guys, but not unless you, like, read a guide to spoil how to get the Master Sword.
Here's my question to you, Matt. How many hearts do you currently have?
Like, 12?
Okay, gotcha. So you've been hunting the temples. You said you had a lot of the temples.
I have
right?
like 40% of the shrines.
Do we want to talk about the shrines a little bit here?
Yeah, of course. Shrines are great. Huge improvement over Breath of the Wild. And
every single one of them, like I walk in and I'm like, oh, this is like unique and creative and I love it. Yeah, so
like,
I'm with you.
Even the combat ones are so much more improved because they're all like freaking what's the name of that
mini
island?
Raid models. Oh, the island in you have to reset and you have to figure out.
Like they take away all your armor, they give you a couple weapons, and there's usually some gimmick to the fight in the shrine, and they're just like, have fun. My favorite is, without giving too many spoilers, battle bots.
Okay.
That was a really fun one. I'm not going to spoil things for you.
Like, I'm going to spoil one, though, because I feel like shrines are a little different. But there's one where we'll say it's like a... There's a couple enemies on the outside, and there's some enemies on the inside, and you have to like teleport up, and then you like jump in inside, okay? I don't know. It's on some mountain or something. But I was having trouble because I'm like... I have 4 hearts right now, or 5. Maybe 5 now at this point. And I was having some trouble with it because I landed there because I jumped off the Sky Island and instead of teleporting back, I'm like, you know what? I see a temple. Let me go to it. Which is another fun thing that happens in this game. But what I essentially had is there's like a spinning like fire thing in one of the rooms and I just lured them all in and then teleported up and then let the fire thing take care of them. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to talk about shrines more explicitly,
I don't mind if you spoil some shrines.
So battle
for
bots,
I'm not so, yeah.
Battle bots is one where there's a specific Zonai device that is like a little Roomba that when you turn it on will, if there's an enemy within its radius, it will like drive and bump into the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the shrine gives you stuff like cannons and lasers and spike things, and gives you basically like a stick as a weapon. So basically, you just like arm up these little robot guys, and they like bravely drive towards the robots. And the robots like have no idea how to deal with these things. It's great. I love it.
It feels like the base temples have the same creativity as some of the hidden temples in the original game, right? Like there's certain lava temples that are like you have to take like carts separately like to get to.
Yeah.
And they're playing with fire and like some skill shots and some other like clever things. Like to me was like where I'm like, oh, like this is what temples should be like, you know, this like set of challenges. And I'm every new thing I encounter, I'm like immediately like enjoying. So, and it doesn't feel so. This to me, like maybe I know it's going back a little bit here to what I mentioned the first thing, but I think because it feels a little more driven, it's easier for me to stay on task even when I go off somewhere. If that makes sense.
And like I also like how you talked about Death Mountain a little bit, and that reminded me of something I wanted to bring up. The narrative feels more driven, and also, you know, people in the world feel more invested in the world. Because, like,
it's not just that's another thing. Yeah, it's not just like everything sucks and the world's gone and we're barely rebuilding. Yeah,
it feels like these people like live in and care about this world. Like in Zora's Domain, you have like in Breath of the Wild, Zora's Domain, they're like, well, it's been raining for a while and the dam might overfill and that would be bad. I was like, that's pretty low stakes.
but I guess the big difference is like I think it just feels like the communities are actually like started thriving again, and then now there's a new calamity they have to deal like calamity, yeah. The new catastrophe they have to deal with. But it's still, it feels definitely a lot more alive, and I actually like that because
the regional
I was getting very
really interesting.
I was getting very tired of like Breath of the Wild, like gloom and doom. Which was the point of the whole game, right?
Yeah.
But part of me wanted to be like, okay, so like what, like now that we've defeated right Calamity Ganon, like is there this world that actually like all the civilizations are you know actually growing and not just like barely alive, right?
Yeah, and I feel like you know, you team up, you've gotten most of the way through the Rito quest line. So, you know,
Tulin or whatever. Yeah.
Tulin joins up with you. Like, you go to these areas and these.
Wow, your parrot is really not having Tulin right now.
Yeah, he's just like, you better not be talking about other birds. But you go to these places and there's problems. And then, like, you know, you have somebody who joins up with you on a quest to solve the problem. And, like, they touched on
it. It feels realistic in some ways.
They touched
on
it in Breath of the Wild a little bit, but, like, they actually accompany you into the dungeons, unlike in Breath of the Wild where they're just like, all right, have fun.
In Breath of the Wild, some of the characters feel like side guys that like are just there, like they're NPCs.
Yeah.
They're not like, even really part of it. Go find this guy. You found this guy, he's gonna talk to this other guy. Okay, we're good. You now have Boulder Shield. Or Lava Shield or whatever.
And the regional phenomena just feels so much more interesting than the Divine Beast problems did, because like, you know, I criticized in Breath of the Wild, the Burrito Village Breath of the Wild questline is like, there's a sky battleship up there and it's spooky.
Well, this is the same thing that's happening in this game. But
well, and now there's a sky battleship up there being spooky, but also
it is the good thing. I think
perpetual night. Our crops are dead. Our people are starving. We're hunting further and further out to try to get food.
Yes,
it feels
they're going
desperate.
To caves. Yeah, this child is being yelled at from the chief, like the captain or whatever. That you're going, like he's going off adventuring.
It really
and he
hates
his little. Tulin has this very much the kid that still doesn't know better, but is out for adventure and like wants to do something to help.
Yeah, and at the top of this, I explained I'm not going to like go into too much detail to avoid spoiling you on the other quest lines, but you know, the Gorons are dealing with what's effectively an opioid epidemic.
okay, all right, here we go.
it like everywhere else is all these like. different phenomena in the Gorons. It's just drugs.
Hey, listen, very serious. I'm here to help out the Gorons here.
That would be
the Zelda.
I was just going to mention though the like I think to that point,
the Zora.
I really liked getting to the top of the storm arc. Was it storm arc? Is that what it's called?
It's
instead of like some like convoluted like before we have the boss battle, like, you know, some random like thing.
I've only done the Rito and the Goron, but I can assure you the Goron also has this really, really cool like build up.
It's just natural, right? It almost feels natural. It's like, oh, we're just going higher, you know, and like find ways to go higher. But the challenge is the platform itself. Like the puzzle feels very, very much like, oh, I see kind of the end ish, but like, how do I get there? And then as you go, you kind of it starts laying out for you. And then you're flying. You have to realize like which way you're flying sometimes, or else you jump up. Like once you're really near the top, and there's just the boats. But it just looks cool too, right? Like it's this whole other thing before the thing. That's just a lot of attention to detail and like care to add things, I think, that make it feel just. Make the world more deep, right?
Yeah, and I can't wait to see the other two regional phenomena because I haven't like started the quest lines, but it at least appears to be Zora's domain is just covered in mud.
Interesting. Okay,
which is bad. Oh, you know, you can understand why that's bad for fish. If like their waterways are polluted, and near as I can tell, the Gerudo are suffering from a zombie apocalypse. So
okay, interesting.
Like it's just so much more interesting than like there's a sandstorm.
the civilizations feel like they're coming alive, and then I mean, if you're saying they're suffering from a zombie apocalypse, I don't want to say anything, but there's a certain zombie in the beginning of the game that might have something to do with that, I imagine.
Yes. Well, like they're all caused. Like,
yeah. No, I know. All of them are going to be caused by the main bad guy. That's like, ooh, the power can't hold me anymore. I'm going to become evil. Although I do like that it doesn't feel so like, oh, I'm big bad and I've taken over the world already. You know, I do like that feeling where it feels like you're discovering things naturally. Like you have these individual things you're dealing with, and you're just helping people out, and then the big plot will happen in the background, right? Tristan, do you have any things you want to add from your details? Maybe any. I think this might be a good time. If you have any kind of reactions, like what people have been saying online, if you want to talk about that.
I don't have a lot of them. I know. I guess minor spoilers. Sidon has a wife, and everyone's mad at him about that.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Real idol energy moment.
My favorite one, and I mean, I guess this is closer to actual spoilers than the Sidon, but it's objectively very funny, and Matt probably knows what I'm leading into.
Here we go.
But I don't remember what town you're set up in. Is it Tarrytown or is it somewhere else? Matt, you can help me out where the house is.
It's Hateno Village.
Hateno Village, okay. If you go to Link's house, it's really obvious that Zelda's been living there for like a really long time.
I think on the map it says Zelda's house.
Yeah. Oh,
it's not even Link's house.
it used to be Link's house, that's the thing. And there are a bunch of people on Reddit in particular, probably elsewhere, but I mean, let's be real, complaining that Zelda quote unquote stole Link's house. And I'm like, oofies, no, that's. It's like average Redditor when a woman wants to stay over at your house.
there are two place settings at the table, ladies and gentlemen. Like...
everything about it suggests cohabitation, and they're like, she stole my house? My real estate. It's like, no.
It's almost like they've been destined over and over again to be around each other, you know, for thousands and thousands
literally
of years.
Everyone in the game, like, oh man, Link and Zelda are so inseparable. They're always, you know, next to each other. Like every NPC is just like, oh hey Link, is Zelda literally like next to you?
They've been the power couple for thousands of generations, and like people are still surprised here.
I think the cool thing, I mean, it's not anyone's reactions. I do like, though, just, I guess, just miscellaneous whatevers. I do think it's cool thinking about, like, ways the game expects you to have played Breath of the Wild. In Breath of the Wild, getting the Master Sword requires you to have X number of, like, actual factual heart containers. Because, like, the buffs from food won't cut it for pulling the sword out of the rock. It constantly does damage to you.
I learned that the hard way. Yep.
I don't remember the exact mechanics surrounding it, but this time it's reversed. Getting the Master Sword involves stamina wheel.
Yes.
And you can't do it with buffs. And I think that's a nice touch.
It's also honestly like less you don't need as much stamina as you needed hearts.
Yeah.
It's just that the quest to getting the Master Sword in Breath of the Wild, like, you had to intuit where it would be, and once you did that, it wasn't too long to get. The quest to get it in Tears of the Kingdom is much longer and a bit more honestly, a lot more difficult.
It's got lore importance, too, which is interesting. It's not just like, oh, I found the sword. It's like, oh, there's some actual stuff happened here.
It also requires you to like think about things for a little bit, because nobody in the world will tell you where it is until you start the quest.
I think the really impressive part is, I'm gonna just very, very small. Once you find the NPC that can tell you where it is, they're very surprised at its location, particularly the fact that its location keeps changing.
Oh, interesting.
And that's all I'll say for that.
No. There you go. I like it. It's Lugia. Is it Latvia? What are the
it's kind of like Roaming Legendary. It's similar. It's very similar, yeah.
Sorry, I wasn't supposed to mention them and then this podcast.
I mean, joking about Latias is very funny in context.
To be fair though, this is, I mean, we're gonna not mention the other Nintendo series very much.
Every single time. Yeah.
But at the same time, it's very hard not to compare Breath of the Wild to like Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire in terms of like building on things from that generation.
Interesting. I don't hate that.
Because that's always been, I wasn't around for the last episode was Breath of the Wild, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys didn't actually get to hear my Breath of the Wild.
This is a good transition, because I was about to compare the two games and then can slowly zone as what's it called? Fade out after. What are your thoughts on Breath of the Wild?
Mine weren't committed to the annals of history, but basically Breath of the Wild, it's a great game. I'm not gonna like knock it. But it's very much a beta test. Like you can really tell that they like made the engine more than anything else. And they're like, okay, that's really cool. And then like I feel like they were kind of losing steam by the time it came to things like the shrines.
It felt like it was a game that probably needed another couple of years to like fully complete. But I think almost I would say, because even when you're playing that game, like it gets to a point where you're like, I'm actually exhausted. And you can feel like, the developers are too. They're just like, the world is so big and they want to not have nothing happening anywhere.
It's
like,
it's odd. Yeah. It's hard to describe because it feels. I was actually about to say something, then I realized it's taken wholesale from Joseph Anderson. I'm pretty sure the tagline for his review was literally too much Zelda.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah,
and then that's pretty much it. That sums up Breath of the Wild. Yeah, it's a bit too much Zelda.
But somehow Tears of the Kingdom works with even more Zelda,
Tears of the Kingdom feels more like a Zelda proper game, I'd imagine, right?
Tears of the Kingdom to me, having not played it, so you know, nice opinion as a YouTuber giving it to you. My take on Tears of the Kingdom as it stands is that it's everything Breath of the Wild really, really wanted to be and built itself up towards. So I think it's hard to like, I don't know, it's obviously a sequel, but it also feels more like a definitive version of Breath of the Wild to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Breath of the Wild's a really, really simplistic plot. Like, it didn't actually... I know Zelda as a series is, like, episodic and, like, not necessarily on. I mean, as much as Nintendo insists it exists, it's not on a timeline per se.
It's at the end. Oh, actually, we'll talk about that some other time.
No, no, no. I'm just saying, as far as like they're all like mostly standalone. It's like a Final Fantasy situation mostly. I mean, Breath of the Wild is supposed to sit at some like nexus point where somehow the Rito and the Zora coexist, and it's a whole thing. But like, you as much as I'm trying to figure out how to say this, you could have Tears of the Kingdom without Breath of the Wild at the end of the day. Like, you're going to have a worse time playing it if you haven't played Breath of the Wild. But from, like, a plot perspective,
I see that.
Breath of the Wild didn't really do a lot. Like, Link wakes up, does some ambiguous things that House don't really have a huge bearing on the plot. Yeah, like, the Divine Beasts are very isolated. You know, like, you solve the problems of, like, the individual Hyrule tribes that are like, you know, directly connected to each beast, but there's not like long lasting stuff. You know, you don't get to watch the same kind of plot happen, you know? So like, there's not the same ramifications. It doesn't need to have necessarily happened. So, I mean, if someone were to play, apart from like mechanical things the game expects you to have,
you feel a little overwhelmed if you hadn't played it, but I agree with your sentiment that you could probably jump in with this whole story and it would be standalone. I think that might be fair.
Yeah. I would say you need to have played Breath of the Wild to understand this game from like a mechanical standpoint.
I think you enjoy it more too.
Yeah. Like, I don't think you need to have completed the story to enjoy this game.
Yes. I'm there.
Would be my take.
I would agree. Also, just before we get into final wrap up stuff, I should also mention the Sky Islands are fun. That's it.
Yeah,
it's a nice mini world to start the war. Like the thing, it essentially does what to that point, they do some of the similar stuff where you have like, oh, you have to go to these three shrines, and
The Great Sky Island's a good tutorial. It feels more focused than the Great Plateau was, which I think works if you're doing it as like a catch up. Like if you played Breath of the Wild and you're like relearning the mechanics, I think the Great Sky Island is good for its more like it's not as linear as it appears, but it's more linear than the Great Plateau was.
And you play with the mechanics, right? Like you have to do all those like hooks on a, you know, like what like you essentially have to go ziplining to make boats
It helps. It's a good tutorial to teach you the mechanics. The other Sky Islands dotted around are not nearly as big, but I think they're still good. There's some really cool like stuff on them.
They're not as much part of the game as you think they'd be. I think from is the probably trailers, fair.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think that's a bad thing.
No,
like, the way they showed it, I thought it was just going to be like the whole game is in the Sky Islands.
Instead, the whole game's in the depths.
I guess I'll have to figure out. I guess I've been missing like 50% of the game so far.
Just literally 50%.
But I mean that gets me excited too. Which by the time we come back to this, I don't know if I've explored the depths. I might just try to beat the mainline story. But
you should explore the depths. you're going to have to explore the depths at least a little bit to beat the mainline story.
I know to talk about it. Yeah, I'll get my reaction on the next one. Okay, let's give our kind of this is similar, I guess, to a first look, but like our reactions, then our ultimate reactions, kind of after how I like we'll say the first part of the game. Tristan, how about you start? What's your reaction from other people's reactions? To the game, ultimately.
It's just a general sense, like what the game.
You've kind of mentioned already, but like, yeah. What do you feel like? This is just the better, the more pinnacle of Breath of the Wild.
I would say so. Yeah, I think it's like one of the. It's hard to like. I've described it in the past as like the Assassin's Creed principle, where playing a future game in the series kind of makes it hard to go back and play the other games. Like, once you've played Assassin's Creed 2 or anything further, like, there's simple things in the first game, like not even being able to swim, that are like, wow, okay, alright, this is rough. I think in some ways that applies here, but also not in others. So it's hard to like draw a bead on exactly where I sit there. I wouldn't say this game completely invalidates Tears or Breath of the Wild, because like you do need at least like that
systematic understanding. I think there's some things that Breath of the Wild works better at, like exploring the initial exploration of Hyrule works better in Breath of the Wild, because
I think that's true. Yeah.
Tears of the Kingdom starts in the middle.
I think that's it though. Like I think that's the only thing I would actually say that Breath of the Wild does definitively better.
The actual open world part in Breath of the Wild, like the first chance to go and explore and keep finding new things, is really really good. Yeah.
Which is funny to me, because I think that was, to call it a criticism is too strong a word, but it was probably my biggest problem with Breath of the Wild. Yeah, because
you just got so lost that at some point, like you could be like, oh well, literally I'm trying to float down the river to this mysterious river to find a tooth of a dragon, and then I get this hat I can wear, and I don't like, what am I doing? What is my life?
Yeah, I feel that.
Am I the dragon tooth boat man?
they'll write a ballad for me. But yeah, I think it is a criticism, because like once I'd beaten that game, and I mean to be fair, like I'd already beaten the game, but there are definitely parts throughout the game where it just felt like the whole momentum of the game slowed down. You know what I mean? Like you get so sidetracked, which is both the very fun part because it's the exploration part, but like you don't want to feel like a game becomes tedious. And I think there were times that, especially if you take a break, or if you were just like less interested of what's going on in the main plot, you kind of be like, yeah, so here we are cutting some wood,
yeah,
making a fire, cooking something.
Just kind of dip into my thoughts. I really think that Tears of the Kingdom fixes pretty much most of my problems with Breath of the Wild. We kind of mentioned them a little bit because you're only just getting to your first one, but I've cleared two of the dungeons, and the dungeons, they're not much more complex than the Divine Beasts, but they're slightly more complex, but most importantly, they're visually diverse, which was a big problem in Breath of the Wild. And the bosses are unique and have mechanics and they're cool. And that just does so much like more than just fighting elemental Ganons.
I can't shoot the eye 20 million times. That's not the strategy.
No, you cannot. The dungeons are cool, like where they're located is different for each one. It's not just some random monster. Clearing them, once you beat the dungeon, there's actually an effect in the world, which they kind of like touched on a little bit in Breath of the Wild with the rain in the Zora area, but like you didn't really notice the thing on the volcano or the bird in the sky doing anything. And I don't know if anything really changes in the Gerudo Desert either. Like, it's really just the Zora Domain in Breath of the Wild that change, but each one in Tears of the Kingdom is having a big effect, and defeating it has a big effect on the local area. You can see, like, how you've improved the lives of the people there, and you've saved them from something, and that's so much better.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, Matt. I feel like they do a lot of stuff right, and I think one of the biggest things for me is the pull factor is a lot better, and I would even say that I'm away from the game and I come back to the game factor is a lot better right now. So like if I take a couple days off, I'm not just like completely lost. I kind of go back and it's like, okay, like here's the thing we're doing, and you know, maybe
with the addition additional maps of like the depths and the sky islands gives you so much more that you can like do. So if you're doing a thing and you're feeling bored, you can go to the depths and it's a completely like different series of challenges and considerations you have to go through to explore and plunge into this place and get rewards that feed back into each other to like and you know, as you improve on stuff in the depths and you get these batteries, you can then use that to make vehicles, and you have extra zonite, you can now use those vehicles with auto build in the open world, in the upper world, and the sky islands to go and explore. And it just, it feels very cohesive and purposeful and
multi-level
Yeah. It's just much more interesting. And, you know, you, as I mentioned, you have the enemy variety. So it's not just Bokoblins and Moblins. You know, you have, Bokoblins, Moblins, Great Bokoblins, Horriblins. You've got those Arakudas. Keys are now worth their weight in gold.
The whole like Zonite civilization set, right? Of bad guys. Yeah.
It's just so much better. I could go on and on.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think I have any much more to add. Objectively, I think this is definitely my game I'm playing now, and I think it's just done everything so well. Okay, I think with that, that'll wrap up our Tears of the Kingdom Part 1. The reason I'm doing Part 1 is because I don't know if it'll be Part 2 or Part 3 at some point. I think maybe it would be best just to give us some more time to get through the game, that our next episode, the one that we get in before July or in July, would be Legend of Zelda, the first game.
Yeah, I think that would probably be best.
So if Matt, if you can,
you have so much of the depths to explore. Like,
yes, yeah. If you can just, I would say, just kind of format that a little bit or organize that a little better than this, just because I know, just like what happened and like the basics, kind
of. Yeah,
and
of course.
I think the one thing, like, once we really start getting into all these games, is I like the background lore to be like something we talk about more. And so the reason I think the Tears of the Kingdom will probably have a part two, part three, is because part two will feel like, okay, we've beaten like everything about the game. Like, let's talk about the rest of the game.
Yeah. I feel like we could be more, I didn't want to have a structure for part two because as we found out halfway through the podcast, you didn't even know what the depths were,
which is great, which is just amazing.
Yeah, so like writing out a plot outline would, you know, better for
part
things.
Two. Yeah. We should do that part two. And then part three, we could even, like, later on, especially if we're still playing, we could do a little more rundown of what we've been playing and then talk about the lore. Tie in at some point. But either way, we will definitely do a part two, is my point. Let's start with the first. So yeah, those listening, I appreciate all of you for listening. How you found this podcast, I don't know, but here you are.
You
clearly have some connection. You've talked to me. You personally know me in real life. I would like to say I appreciate you for listening. And yeah, our next goal will be to have that first game, kind of go over it, where the world started. Probably I'd be curious to know, like, some of the inspiration, like what's kind of the background behind all this, and as we go through the games, I think what will be really cool is how the lore expands, right? Of the larger kind of timeline, like some timeline talk, but just generally how the different ideas from these games like start to grow through the years. I think that'll be really cool to look at.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, Matt, thank you for being here. Tristan, thank you. And we'll see you all next time. Peace.
Yep, see you.
No problem. See you.